ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. 2026 is already shaping up to be another huge year in politics, with inflation remaining persistently high, lingering housing challenges, and now a royal commission getting underway. So join me and the sharpest minds at the ABC to cut through the political spin and bring you what politics means for you. That's Politics Now, and you can hear it on the ABC Listen app.
For weeks, Donald Trump threatened Iran with military strikes, and on Saturday morning, the bombing by US and Israeli forces began.
The United States and Israel have launched a joint operation against Iran, with witnesses reporting blasts in the capital Tehran and smoke was seen rising from the city.
This is a war, it's only a few hours old, but it's spreading quickly. This has been the fear of many people.
Much of the Middle East is on lockdown as Iran retaliates with waves of drone and missile strikes on Israel and neighbouring Arab countries.
Iran responded by attacking US military bases across the region. Australia's Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, moved quickly to update Australia's travel advice.
Given the concerns around security for the region, last night I upgraded our travel advice to do not travel for Israel, Lebanon, Bahrain, Kuwait, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates.
In a social media video, the US president urged the Iranian people to rise up and topple the regime.
A short time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran. Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people.
Donald Trump later revealed the Iranian supreme leader was dead. Today, Nate Swanson, Iran expert at the Atlantic Council, on what could come next. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal land in Sydney. This is ABC News Day. Nate, let's start by talking about those first strikes on Saturday morning. Now, they occurred at around 10 a.m. Just tell me what was happening then and what was your reaction when you saw that news?
Shock would be the reaction a little bit. What happened was the United States, in an initial round, focused on taking out Iran's ballistic missile capability and their air defense. And at the same time, the Israeli government came in and did some similar strikes, but also focused on taking out a pretty significant subset of Iran's political leadership. That included the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, who's been Iran's supreme leader for the last 37 years.
So these initial strikes, they were pretty much immediately confirmed by the US and Israeli governments. Donald Trump, not long afterwards, Nate, he posted a video, of course, on Truth Social, his social media platform. He was wearing a grey hat with USA printed on it. Just tell me about that video and what he was saying.
Well, no comments on his attire, but it's a rather remarkable video because, you know, he laid out a kind of a historic case for the differences and the animosity that's existed between Iran and the U.S. and Iran and much of the Western world for really the 47-year history of the Islamic Republic. And then announced we were going to have a major military campaign, and he kind of ends by calling on the Iranian people to rise up.
To the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will be probably your only chance for generations.
I think what is kind of unique in the message is he did not outline the imminent threat that led to this. It's more of a historic threat in a longer term, but that is very unique from a U.S. perspective to not highlight that. And then he also kind of made it clear that this is going to be up ultimately to the Iranian people to actually secure the future of Iran. So I think it is kind of an unprecedented military action.
All right. Now, initially, thick smoke was seen billowing out of the center of Tehran. Now, that is where the Iranian supreme leader normally resides. And, of course, later the Israeli leader Benjamin Netanyahu, in a televised address, said there are many signs that the supreme leader is no longer alive.
This morning, in a powerful surprise attack, we destroyed the compound of the dictator Khamenei in the heart of Tehran. For 3.5 decades, this cruel dictator, who terrorized the world with the scorn of his people and who worked tirelessly without a care on the plan to exterminate Israel, this plan is gone, and there are many signs that this dictator is gone too.
Now, how significant is that?
I mean, it's extremely significant. I mean, he is not the entirety of the system, but he is the decision maker in Iran. All significant decisions go through him, and he has set the course of the country, you know, I've said, you know, for almost nearly 4 decades. So it's a historic moment. It is a end of an era. It is also extremely, you know, risky moment moving forward. But I think there's no denying that this is going to have really big implications. There is a chance that the Iranian people might be able to secure a different future for themselves, but there's also a chance that a lot of bad things could happen as well. And so there's just a lot of unknowns at this point.
Sure is. All right. And just to make clear, this attack, it's far more extensive, isn't it, than the attack we saw back in June last year against the Iranian nuclear facility. So what do we know about what's been hit and how extensive that is?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, it's a completely different style of attack from President Trump. This is not the operation that happened last June. This is not the Venezuela operation. This is not the Soleimani strike. This is much more risky, potentially much more significant, and much more open-ended. The consequences, you know, are going to be much different this time around, whereas I think in, you know, previous conflicts, I think Iran was looking for quicker off-ramps there to kind of reduce hostilities. They're always trying to avoid this existential threat to the regime and to their top leadership, and now we're in that moment. So this just sets a whole new set of consequences that have really never been faced in the history of the Islamic Republic.
And what do you make of the Iranian response? Because, of course, it immediately began attacking U.S. air bases across the region.
What has really been surprising is the attacks on the Gulf. You've seen now a number of high-profile attacks on, you know, the Kuwait airport. You've seen attacks on a hotel. I mean, it could have been just debris, but there's an attack on a hotel in Dubai, a high-rise in Bahrain. These are, you know, civilian centers, and I kind of thought would be Iran's last escalation option. To be clear, I don't know if that is a sign of weakness or desperation, or if it's a sign that they're trying to push the Gulf to de-escalate immediately. And, you know, and that's a risky gamble, because it could work, or there it's also entirely possible that, you know, this kind of unites some of the Gulf countries who've been very in favor of de-escalation against Iran.
And Israel, of course, is on high alert. Air raid sirens have been sounding, haven't they? Another tense time, I guess, for the Israeli people.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I've just got off the phone with one of my colleagues from the Atlantic Council who's in Israel right now. I mean, he said he's been in a bomb shelter, you know, 12 or 13 times already today, but they've been relatively small, you know, ones and twos in terms of like missile interceptors. In the later afternoon and late evening there was a couple bigger ones where you heard dozens of, you know, missiles being shot down. But we don't know whether this is prodding the system or if Iran can't respond. And I think this is a really important indicator of what happens next. You know, if Iran doesn't have the ability to respond, this is a big deal. I mean, this would be very good, obviously, from a U.S. and an Israeli perspective. And that may be why they're lashing out the Gulf, because those are just easier, softer targets, something that, you know, the U.S. and Israel weren't necessarily prepared to defend initially. And that, so that could be an indication of weaker Iranian capabilities, we think, or it could be Iran is holding bigger strikes in reserve. So there's a lot of uncertainty right now, and we're definitely in a moment of fog of war.
Well, Nate, let's have a look now at Donald Trump's reasoning for this attack and what could come next. It came, of course, after American and Iranian officials had held another set of talks in Switzerland where they again failed to reach a resolution. Was there any hope that there could have been a resolution in any of these talks?
You know, I think there was, so I should be fully transparent here. I was in the Trump administration through last summer, and I was a part of the Iran negotiating team up through last summer. And so I do think, you know, a year ago or so, there was probably, prior to the June attacks, there probably was room for a negotiated settlement. It never really came close to happening, but I do think there's a genuine desire on both sides to make it happen. I think in the last month or so, I've been very, very pessimistic about it coming together for a couple of reasons. One is I think the U.S. administration kind of misunderstands where the regime is. I think they, you know, and Donald Trump's been very clear about this, thought the Iranians would just capitulate to any demand. There is this extreme moment of weakness. And so from his perspective, of course, they should just capitulate. But I think that kind of runs counter to everything Khamenei stands for. So I always thought it was much more likely that Khamenei was prepared to die a martyr than he was to actually compromise on something significant. And I think, you know, that's ultimately what happened. So, you know, this day was coming in some form or another for weeks. Maybe it's just a little bit bigger than I think we previously anticipated.
And even before the talks, of course, it was clear Donald Trump was ready to strike. Because, of course, there was that massive military buildup in the region from the US, the largest since the invasion in Iraq in 2003.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And so if this was all kind of kicked off with, you know, the protests that happened in Iran, you know, in late December, I believe, very early into January, I think January 2nd, you know, President Trump, you know, had promised support for the protesters and said, you know, we're locked and loaded to respond. He said, you know, if Iran kills any protesters, we'll come out and respond to that. So he set this red line. But then Iran responded with this just massive crackdown where they killed, you know, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people. And the president, you know, felt compelled to enforce his red line for a variety of reasons, including for a mishmash of objectives, if we're being perfectly honest. But one of them was to just not be seen as being weak. He kind of made it a zero-sum game. And so here we are, you know, on one level, it's very predictable given the history, but just the rapid acceleration in the last 2 months is frankly pretty shocking for someone that's followed this for almost 20 years.
Yeah, and Donald Trump, he has said, you know, an aim is to eliminate Iran's nuclear program, but it does seem much more like it was about regime change. He's telling the Iranian people to topple the regime. I mean, what are they supposed to do at this point, do you think?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. Look, it's a huge ask of the Iranian people, right? But, you know, and to start it off, you know, he's eliminated, you know, some very senior leadership along with Israelis, and he's eliminated some of their, you know, core defense functions. So it's possible. But look, I mean, if we're being honest about this, there is no clear Delcy Rodriguez equivalent in Iran like there was in Venezuela. There's no one to immediately turn to. There is no unified opposition, but there's no clear successor. There's also no indication that even with Khamenei dead, the regime is going to fall. There is no guarantee they just lay down their arms now. It is entirely possible they continue killing Iranians in the street if they rise up. Until the people with guns switch sides, the regime will be able to hold power. And so you're really counting on security defections, something we haven't really seen to date.
But tell me, what is Iran's capability here, its military capability? Can it fight back substantially against the might of the United States and Israel? It does have its proxies, right, like the Houthis.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, really key question because I kind of alluded to this earlier. We don't know if they're capabilities have just been limited and relatively minor so far, or if they're holding the capabilities back. Now, I do think to your question about the proxies, yes, they have kept them out of the past conflicts, including the last the June operation. I see every reason that the proxies will be involved in this. The Houthis, as you mentioned, or probably Hezbollah and Iraqi Shia militias. So I do think that is absolutely on the table and likely. I would expect to see the Houthis targeting maritime ships and maritime security. And really, I mean, how effective will they be is a big unknown. Mm-hmm. So it's a very opaque situation, but that is an incredibly important indicator to watch.
right, well, Nate, let's look now at what could come next. It's worth noting that Donald Trump made this decision unilaterally, didn't he? He did not seek approval from Congress. How significant is that in itself?
It is a very good question. There is not a authorized use of military force for this operation. There was not a vote to give him those powers, nor was there really even a conversation on this. There was some speculation he might use the State of the Union early this week to make the case to the American people, but he didn't. So I think you'll see a very partisan reaction on this part from the U.S. political spectrum. I think you'll see Democrats rushing out, and they already are, to say this is an illegal war with questionable legal justification. You know, and that's obviously valid, and I think Republicans probably won't take that view.
Yeah, the international reaction too has been very varied. You have the UK, France, Germany calling on Iran to resume talks.
It is vital that we prevent further escalation and return to a diplomatic process. We want to see peace and security and the protection of civilian life.
Whereas here in Australia, interestingly, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, says Australia supports the US action.
We support the United States acting to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon and to prevent Iran from continuing to threaten international peace and security. We are concerned about regional escalation and urge the protection of civilians.
For those on the ground, do you make of that?
Well, I noticed Canada too. I mean, I would be curious about your reaction more. My guess from an American perspective, and please tell me if I'm getting this wrong, is that Australia and Canada are calculating this is not worth the fight with Donald Trump. You know, the Islamic Republic is repugnant, and so why fight him on this? Why go crossways on this? But tell me, is that wrong? I don't know.
We would have to ask the Prime Minister directly, I think. Now, tell me, Nate, as we mentioned, Iran has responded by attacking US bases across the Middle East. I assume US posts across the world would be at threat, and security, I assume, is being boosted, or it is being boosted. How, in your view, could this escalate further?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it absolutely could escalate elsewhere, and I think Iran will be trying to do asymmetric threats all over. I mean, my one comment on that, though, is Iran's ability to do effective, impactful operations decrease the further they get away from Iran. So the greatest threats will be in the countries in the region, the Gulf, Iraq, Jordan, Israel, you know, things like that. I think it's much harder for them to do operations further, but you're right. I mean, everyone has to be on guard right now, and especially all U.S. personnel overseas.
All right. So Americans have been dragged, I suppose, into another war, which appears to be about regime change. Now, is there a chance that this, like others, could drag on for years? What's your view on that?
As for how long it could go, I mean, it really, I think, is going to come down to Iran's actual defensive capabilities. It's just unclear at this point whether they're holding back or they, in fact, don't have major capabilities. So that is a key factor, and we don't know the answer on that. The second one, though, is also there's limits on the defense capabilities as well as the offensive targeting, right? As the U.S. and the Israelis prosecute this campaign, they probably have only, you know, 4 or 5 days of offensive targets planned. And so what do you do after that? And what do you do in terms of defense, right? I think part of the reason the 12-day war ended when it did is the Israelis and the U.S. were kind of stretched on their interceptor capability. And so they didn't want that to drag on for forever. You know, at that point, you know, if you go past that, you know, Israeli civilian populations would be increasingly at risk. And so something like that could be the case now, but we don't know. And really the third factor is just, what do the Iranian people do? You know, you have this unprecedented opportunity, but there is massive risk going to the street for all the reasons we've already talked about. So I think it'll be really interesting to see how that dynamic plays out and whether people do go out in mass numbers and then whether Iran, you know, kills again in mass numbers. And it's just really hard to predict that this early into the conflict.
Nate Swanson is the Senior Fellow and Director of the Iran Strategy Project at the Atlantic Council. He also worked with the US government on matters relating to Iran for 18 years. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.